Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, this is Michael Jans, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry, and to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. I'm delighted to deliver this conversation to you. It is with a colleague of mine and a relatively new friend and a bright spot in the world of insurance marketing. One of the concerns that I had when we transitioned to ownership of Agency Revolution is or was whether or not the acquiring company had the skill set that we felt was so central to not only the growth of the company, but to the quality of the value proposition for our customers. And because I pretty much have done nothing but 25 years of insurance marketing, and naturally I wanted to make sure that that skill was available in the company as my role slowly changed. Well, I'm delighted to say that I found that it does. We wouldn't have selected this company as an acquirer if it didn't. And one of the reasons that I know that it has the skill and I think insight and wisdom and real world experience is because of the person that you're about to hear from, Kirk Faulkner. Kirk has, as you will discover, an interesting background. Among the things that he has done that you and I probably haven't done, lived in Siberia for 2 years. I don't know anybody who's done that. Stand-up comic, I think, in New York for about 8 years. That's a job that I feel always requires a lot of courage and deserves admiration. But he has also had real world, in the streets, marketing experience. And that's why I'm delighted to share this conversation with you. If you are interested, and presumably you are, in no longer selling insurance as a commodity, and you shouldn't do it that way, this is a conversation that you want to listen to. Kirk talks about how to stand out from the crowd when consumers think you're all the same. He shares his four-step process to creating marketing that people love and getting them to consume that marketing and to engage with you about it. And he shares his insights on the most important elements of your agency brand. So, if those are the things that float your boat and get your juices going, then I want to encourage you to listen to this conversation carefully. Without much further ado, I will simply again remind you, if you have comments, feedback, testimonials about this podcast, share them with me at michael@agencyrevolution.com. If you have a guest or you know somebody who you think would be a good guest for the podcast series, somebody maybe you want me to ask hard questions to, then again, let me know at michael@agencyrevolution.com. Also, if you would be interested in getting an advanced copy of my State of the Industry report, in which I analyze the four most powerful trends affecting the retail insurance agency today with strategy on how to address each of those trends, I am hopefully finishing that up shortly in the next week or two. If you'd like an advanced copy, pre-galley, probably full of typos, but if that's the kind of stuff that doesn't bother you, you just want to get your hands on it, let me know. Email me, it's michael@agencyrevolution.com, and just say State of the Industry, and I'll get you an advanced copy of it, no charge. So now, without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce you to my friend, Kirk Faulkner. Hello, everybody. I'm delighted to introduce you to my guest, Kirk Faulkner. Kirk, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Notice that I did not call you Kirk Ferguson.
Yep, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Or Princess Fergie. For those who don't know the story, and of course nobody knows the story, for like some intense period of time, like maybe 1 week, I was calling this guy Ferguson and emailing Kirk.Ferguson or FMG Suites. And finally, I think it was the IT department got back to me and said, hey, you know, we keep getting this email that like... we don't have a Kirk.
You seem genuinely upset that Kirk Ferguson wasn't emailing you back, so I was really worried about that.
All right, so let's hit the ground running, Kirk. I will share sort of a little bit of background on the relationship here. Kirk is with, and in fact, the son of the founder of the company that has acquired my company, Agency Revolution. And Kirk was in, and still is, in the marketing department. And, of course, one of my concerns is having run a marketing-driven company for 25 years, what do the new guys look like? Like, do they really have the skill? Can they really pull this thing off? And I'm pleased to say, number one, I think my former company, Agency Revolution, just keeps getting better because of the acquisition and the resources that are available to make it better, but also the talent is great. So this generation, mine, doesn't have to worry about the new generation coming in and delivering the goods because there are excellent, excellent marketers on the team and excellent marketers that are active throughout the industry right now. So without further ado, Kirk, you've been in marketing for 10 or more years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have.
All right. you've got a really interesting career background. And so I just want to give you the opportunity to give us a little thumbnail sketch, some of the things that stand out that have made Kirk the person that you are right now.
Well, I was living in New York City. I went to grad school for dramatic writing, which I like to say is like regular writing, except for you wear a beret and cry a lot. After I had gotten my degree, a few friends and I started a website called Filmcatcher, where we would go around the country, actually around the world, to all of the major film festivals and do video interviews with directors and actors and the such. And we were all very into film and very into doing the interviews, but nobody was doing the marketing or the branding of the company. And so I just started in doing that kind of because no one else was, and found that I was kind of preternaturally gifted towards it. And after that, worked for another startup called Schuster, and then ended up working for a mildly famous woman named Faith Popcorn. She has a name that rings out. and I was a trend strategist for her for many years, and that was kind of where I got my first really professional agency level exposure to marketing and branding.
Got it. All right. So you and I have talked about Faith Popcorn a little bit in the past, and I'm fascinated and intrigued by it because I think there has to be some marketing lesson there for everybody. I was aware of Faith Popcorn, and yes, she was moderately famous. And in the business world, she really had gotten some attention because I think for one reason, among others, I'm not saying you're the only one, is that she has a unique and interesting and intriguing name.
Yeah. No, you know, I think that name has served her very well. It wasn't her real name, but they have it legally changed.
When I was observing her, you know, I thought, wow, what a great name for somebody who's in the marketing field and who wants to grab some attention. It occurred to me that maybe it wasn't her actual, given name, the name that she was born with. So interesting that you have revealed now that, yes, in fact, that wasn't her name, and you don't need to tell me what it actually was. But as I recall, it did start. It started with a P.
Her name was Faith Plotnick.
Yeah.
Plotnick, I think.
Okay.
She had some excuse for why she had changed it, but I think she just wanted a more interesting name.
Well, it definitely worked. Now, you were this is a job description. To some extent, I think this is almost my job description. You are a trend strategist.
Yes.
In her What does that mean?
So we, there's probably four or five trend strategists working for her at the time. There was kind of a young group that was very plugged into things going on in the culture. And we would do something every day she called brailing the culture, where we were each assigned a huge amount of periodicals and magazines that we would have to comb through every day and find new trends and interesting things coming up. And then we would write these big reports that would then get folded into big presentations to, you know, Fortune 200 brands,
right,
companies that really relied on her to let them know what was happening in the culture and what they could do to, you know, tap into that.
Well, for a while, she kind of owned that space of trends. I mean, after mega trends, then there was Faith Popcorn. And
she called herself an applied futurist.
An applied futurist. Okay, got it. And so, but before we move on, I mean, it one of the things that strikes me is that she, I'm not sure that, like, she could have had 10 trend strategists and she could have been doing the, you know, the most intellectually insightful work that you could imagine. But I just can't help but think that that name at least allowed her to grab and hold attention and, like, you know, hold some brain space for everybody who was thinking about trends. So it was.
I don't deny it. Yeah, her company was called Faith Popcorn's Brain Reserve.
Okay.
So she was very into naming things.
Yeah. All right. Well, names are important. So before we move on, that's a marketing lesson, and I'm fascinated by the fact that I actually know somebody who worked for Faith Popcorn. Anything else about that experience that you want to lay on us before we move on?
No, I think, you know, she just really tied me into making sure that you're plugged into what's happening in the culture and that you're capturing opportunities as they come up. I think, you know, now that I work in the financial advisor sector, I think sometimes there's almost a little reticence to be at the cutting edge of things, and I think that's a mistake that people make. You really need to remain plugged in, and I think people listening to your podcast, I think that's a great first step. You know, that's a very active way to stay connected to the trends coming out.
Well, trends are, you know, I mean, I can't say the trends were less important before, but it strikes me that the forces that are impacting business, that are impacting the economy, the kinds of forces and trends that are changing consumer behavior are really powerful right now and really moving fast right now. For our listeners, I am hopefully in the next couple of weeks putting finishing touches on my annual State of the Industry address. And essentially, I'm addressing four trends that I think agents absolutely have to pay attention to. So kudos to you for being a professional in that field. So what we just talked about, Faith Popcorn's distinctive brand and ability to stand out from the crowd, fits in with what I think is one of your areas of expertise, which we might broadly call branding, but I think you have a sensitivity to it. Branding, you know, those of us who are like longtime direct response guys like me, you know, many of professionals in that field sort of kind of look down on branding because they're thinking, you know, the purpose of marketing is to get the phones to ring. But serious marketing professionals recognize that you better have a consistent brand that stands for something and allows you to be remembered and to stand out from the crowd. So that's what I want to zero in on is some of the insights, observations, and lessons you've learned in that regard.
I understand that whole kind of knee-jerk reaction against branding. It sounds a little bit like a soft science to a lot of people. And the best kind of metaphor that I think I've come up against recently for why branding is important came from a book called Blue Ocean Strategy.
Love it.
By a guy, Uh-huh. You know that book?
Highly recommend to the readers, yes.
Yeah, the idea, the metaphor of the book is, if you're a shark and you're looking for fish, you know, your first reaction is to go towards the red ocean, where there's already a lot of feeding frenzy going on. But that's where the competition is the highest. That's where you have the least chance of just getting that easy fish. So the idea of Blue Ocean Strategy is you need to find your own section of untouched ocean where there's not a lot of other sharks hunting, and that's where you're going to get the easiest and the most fish is in the Blue Ocean. And I think that is what service professionals, especially service professionals in crowded fields, really need to do is they need to be constantly finding their own field to be in and repositioning, reframing the whole game so that they are standing alone in a field.
Let's zero in on that because I think that's of critical importance. So we're in an industry. Let's take U.S. only, and I know we have international listeners as well, but let's start with the U.S. Roughly 40,000 independent insurance agencies, so divide the country up by that. Add on top of that all of the captive agents and the direct riders. Add on top of that the massive amount of advertising done by the mass marketers, the direct channel like Geico and Progressive. Add on top of that the now emerging digital channel and the insurtech competitors, many of which we don't know that much about. And it reminds me of a client that I've got who I saw very recently. Lives in kind of a suburban community of a major metropolitan area. And as I was driving to my Uber was taking me to a consulting session, an advisory session with him, I realized that, you know what? First of all, he was on Main Street, and so was every other insurance agent, a relatively small community on virtually every single corner. And clearly they saw that as a problem. But in some ways, I think what you're saying is that could be an opportunity if you can create this brand. So talk us through what does an agency need to do to stand up and step out and be recognized as being different and desirable?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's an interesting thought because, you know, on one level, you're all selling insurance. It's the same field, and there's nothing you can do about that. It's not like software where you can come up with, you know, infinitesimally small angles on the same idea. Where your differentiation really comes out, and we even call it something like a unique service proposition. It comes out in your thought leadership, in your expertise, and in your motivation. I feel like I'm already quoting too many books, but there's a great book that I think really captures this for me, and it's one that I've used a lot. It's by a guy named Simon Sinek, and it's called Start With Why. Mm-hmm. Start With Why or Begin With Why? It's one of the two. But his whole point is, Start With Why by Simon Sinek. His whole point is when people start to answer the question of what they do, they're starting from the wrong angle. You first need to answer why you do what you do before then you answer how you do what you do and then exactly what you do. And what that really does for people is if I'm looking at different service providers, one of the things I'm going to look for is the motivation, like the bigger picture of what they're hoping to achieve with their service. And once I get tied into that vision, I all of a sudden have a much different relationship with the service provider than I would with just somebody who's trying to tick off the boxes and sell me on some little technicality.
Got it. So, in Sinek's work, that whole concept of starting with why really forces the entrepreneur or the business to dive into their deeply held values. Like this is really why I do this. So, Kirk, I think what you're saying is that if the consumer then can resonate with those deeply held values, the depth of connection is, at a human level, is really, really deep and very difficult to break. Yes?
Absolutely. And you know, that brings me to another point that I like to talk with financial advisors about, which is kind of the different you know, you're talking about values, and I think brand values are really important, and the way that a brand value plays out in the life of a client is something we call the difference between features and benefits. You know, a service offering is basically an offering made up of several different technical features, but the benefits that those features have are a much more emotional thing that happens in the life of a client based on the values of the brand. A good illustration of this that I always come back to is the from the first iPod when it came out.
Right.
You know, it boasted that it had 1 gigabyte of storage. But back then, we didn't know what a gigabyte was. We weren't even sure if it was pronounced gigabyte or gigabyte or what it was. So it didn't really do much good to explain to people, oh, look, we're giving you a gigabyte of storage. So Apple, who
is that a lot? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Apple, who is maybe one of the all-time masters of brand values and putting forth features and benefits, instead of selling this iPod as something that had a gigabyte of storage, started saying, it's 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the emotional value of this feature became clear to everybody, this benefit that they understood. So I'm constantly talking with financial advisors who are very feature-oriented, who are very into expressing kind of the hard-edged lines of their service offering. What does that translate to in the lives of your clients? Which of their needs, which of their pains, which of their hoped for gains are you alleviating? Are you helping with? And how does that translate? And how does that reflect back on the bigger values that you expressed for your brand in the first place?
All right. So let's talk about the let's make a practical application out of this. So. Here's a common conversation in P&C these days is the so-called or alleged commoditization of insurance, where price is the only distinguishing feature. And some think that, gosh, when we hear Geico saying, 15 minutes can save you 15% or more, and, a lot of the direct marketers are essentially, to some extent, they are selling a price-driven commodity. And so then if we look at the independent channel or the agency channel, even some of them, in fact, far too many of them think, well, it is kind of being commoditized, unless you're talking about, maybe middle market commercial lines and up. We're talking about selling a policy and gosh, I can't really tell the difference between this policy from this carrier or this policy from this carrier, so maybe price is a little bit different. So I'm going to try to get them the greatest price or the best price. There are lots of reasons not to sell on price. But setting that aside, what would you say to an agency who says, okay, I think I get what Kirk is talking about. I don't want to be a commodity broker. For lots of reasons. First of all, it's really hard to distinguish yourself when you're a commodity broker. And secondly, the margins are awful and the customer churn is terrible. So I don't want to do that. And I do believe that we have, we've got a great team, et cetera. But, I think people have come to recognize that I can't just say, great service, or you can really trust us, or empty platitudes like that. So to make what you're talking about, make what you're talking about, and turn it into like a real exercise or a real discipline. How does an agency go about that?
Well, I'm gonna use a phrase that I don't love the phrase, but what it stands for is absolutely necessary in this, and that's thought leadership. The reason I don't love the phrase is it sounds a little self-aggrandizing, and I think, especially in the service industry, it's full of a lot of very humble people who don't necessarily see themselves as a Tony Robbins type. But the thought leadership that you provide is basically what it is. It's the brand expression, it's the brand engagement that people have, where it's the different channels of communication that you're putting forward, and so that that's everything from direct communication like email to more widespread communication like social marketing. and it's the content that comes through that those communication channels. So what you really need to be looking at is delivering high-impact, educational, value-driven, and action-inspiring content through the best channels for the marketplace that you're trying to reach. That's basically content marketing in a nutshell, and it can take a million different iterations. You know, it's not just all tweeting and newsletters, but not that those aren't big things.
Right.
But, the ways that you are communicating real insight, and you know, insight is it's a little more difficult than just your regular kind of 500 word fluffy blog. It's helping people see an easier way to do something, a better way to do something, a quicker way to do something, or a more rewarding way to do something. And if you can be delivering those real insights through some communication channel on a regular basis, and at the same time, you know, tying that in again into your higher brand values, you're going to differentiate yourself. That commoditization of insurance isn't going to be a problem for you, because you're going to be tying people into a much higher brand narrative that they'll be happy to be a part of. And, you know, I know that right now millennials and Generation Z seem like they're kind of further down the line, but they are coming up. They're going to be the customers of tomorrow.
The millennials are the customers of today and in our space more and more every day. And so I think, you know, the direction you were going, it seems to me that they have a heavy appetite, a strong appetite for valuable content, and that they have a really good meter that separates the, how do I put this, the BS content from the really valuable, insightful content.
Absolutely. So I think my technical title now is, I forget what it is sometimes. I think I'm the director of content marketing here at FMG Suite.
Uh-huh.
And so I am constantly looking to fine-tune, making sure that we're answering the questions that people are asking. Like that's maybe the easiest way to put it, is you want to answer the questions that people are asking for real, not the things that you think they should be asking, or the things that, you know, some one person said they were asking. You really want to get tied into that. And so one of the, if I could, you know, just so people feel like they come away here with at least one thing they can look at, there's a website called answerthepublic.com. Have you heard of this?
Yeah. Okay.
You can go on this website and type in the words of the topics that you feel like you deal with most, and it will reveal the, you know, usually somewhere between 100 and 200 of the top questions that people are asking about that topic.
And where is it sourcing? Where is it sourcing those questions from? Who knows?
Some search algorithm.
Okay, right. So okay, some source of big data. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It's an algorithm that goes through searches and finds, you know, what people are actually asking in question form. And it's an interesting point because, you know, we're just on the verge of switching between the point where there was more typed searches to more spoken searches, because there's so many people who are using Siri and Alexa. And the big difference between a typed search and a spoken search is that spoken searches tend to be phrased in the form of a question.
Uh-huh.
Because you talk to your devices like they're a person. When you go to answerthepublic.com and you see the actual questions people are asking, it's a really great way to figure out what kind of content you need to be delivering to you know, provide insightful answers to these questions.
All right. So let's make our audience slightly uncomfortable for a moment. Because, to some extent, I think that's my job, right? It's to afflict the comfortable and to comfort the afflicted. So let's afflict the comfortable. A lot of agents...
You've got to be disruptive.
I think a lot of agents when they hear a message like this, they kind of go, oh gosh, that's not what I signed up for. I signed up to be an insurance agent and to run an insurance agency. And so I do that stuff. And now you're asking me to be a thought leader, a thinker, a writer, a publisher. And right. So what do you want to say to them?
Well, first off, I actually totally understand that. And a lot of the stuff that we're talking about is kind of complicated and a little bit difficult. But what I would say is you became an insurance agent. You knew that a big part of becoming an insurance agent was having conversations with people about what was important in their lives. And what we're talking about now is nothing more than just having a larger conversation with people. It's about expanding the edges of that conversation, getting it out there, getting it out onto social media, getting it out through different communication channels. And yes, maybe that does involve more writing than you originally thought. Maybe it involves dealing with some technology that you weren't originally comfortable with. And there's definitely services that you can reach out that can help with that. There's, all different kinds of from freelance services to services like Agency Revolution, people helping expand that. But at its heart, as long as you are good at what you do, as long as you're a good insurance agent and you know how to speak to people and you are an expert in your field, you're going to be able to. This isn't going to be so much as a challenge as it's just going to be an amplification of what you were already good at. Now, if you're a bad insurance agent and you're not an expert in your field,
right,
you're going to have a big problem. But I don't know how to help you in that case.
Got it. Okay. So, by the way, that is a great answer. I'm going to take note of that answer. And by the way, for the audience, I've got shortcuts on bridging that gap from being good at what you're good at and creating content in my upcoming book. So I got some shortcuts for you, and I have pledged now to make that book available for free for listeners of the podcast. At least if you jump on it fast enough, I'll tell you how to get it. Okay. So so now step number one. Okay, I created some great content. I feel like I've communicated something that solves a problem or provides education or delivers an answer. Now, you had mentioned step number two, which is delivering it through appropriate channels.
Right.
Now, so that being said, channels are everywhere. There are hundreds of social media platforms. And of course, most people don't know what the hundreds are, but there are hundreds of social media platforms. And then there are the big ones, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. There's email marketing, and you can deliver great content through email. So if I were an agent, and I know there's no universal answer because, people are in different niches, they're in different communities, they have different markets. How do I know how to get my content in front of the audience that I want it to be in front of? Without wasting a whole bunch, because I think that's a frustration as people they're trying different platforms of, or they've heard the late, the guru on the stage saying, you got to be on Snapchat and, look at this cool new technology or here's the shiny new thing. I want to kind of eliminate the dazzle of all the shiny new things and provide some advice or guidance to agents so they can make a few decisions. How do they go about selecting channels?
Well, I think you brought up some great channels and some good points there. I would kind of look at it as you have two groups of people. You have people who are in your fan club and people who could be in your fan club.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are in your fan club are the people who are on your email list. They're the people who have given you what we would refer to as permission marketing. They've
right.
said it's cool for you to send me things, and that is the primary group that you are marketing directly to. They're a great group because you can ask them to share things with other people. You can They've already decided that they're great for that they're excited to be inspired by what you put out, and the more and more people you get onto that list, the better an experience you're going to have that way. So that's the goal, is to move people from the outside group to the inside group. Now, if you're looking for people in the outside group to talk to, there's a lot of different ways to do that. And there, you know, we could dive into this for a couple hours, but one thing you want to do is you want to be putting yourself out there onto these social channels, and you want to be finding yourself in conversations. You can't just throw something on the wall and hope everybody just starts to react to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to be talking with other people on these social channels that have audiences that, you know, what we would call influencers,
right.
People who have spent time growing their own audiences and are thought leaders themselves. And then you may need to, and this is something that people need to come to grips with, you may need to spend some money and push some of your content out through targeted advertising. And there's nobody better than that at that than Facebook, and LinkedIn is a close right behind them. That you can really focus in on exactly the kind of people you want to find. You can create lookalike audiences based on your current mailing list. You could upload your mailing list and say, okay, find me people who look like this. But you do need to, in order to stand out at this point, you need to put a little money behind it sometimes and tell Facebook and LinkedIn who exactly to show your content to.
Got it. All right. So by the way, Kirk, I have an idea for a follow-up interview that we can do later, which would be kind of a detailed step-by-step process on how to optimize Facebook advertising. But that's a topic in and of itself. All right. So actually, you know, as I think about this conversation, you've identified three steps. Let me lay them out how I have heard it, and then you tell me if I'm on the right track. Number one, it's figuring out who you are, what you stand for, what your values are, right?
Right.
And that shouldn't be minimized. That should be, you really, I think what you're saying, and I know Simon Sinek would agree with this, that there should be some blood, sweat, and tear process that you go through in order to get there. And if you're in the middle of it and you're saying, this is too hard, then you're probably in the right process, right? That you really should dive into what matters at a very deep level and why you do what you do and how you deliver meaning and how you make a difference in the world. So that's number one. Number two is identifying how not just how you communicate it, but how your audience, how your market can benefit from your expertise and sharing your values. So it's identifying problems that need to be solved and then creating content around those. And then step number three is identifying the channels, ways to publish or ways to distribute that content so that, number one, the people that are in your permission group get closer, and number two, the people who aren't in your permission group jump into it and say, oh, I like that. They raise their hand and they jump into your group, because there's nothing like email. There's nothing like an email list where people say, yeah, I'm in a relationship or I want to be in a relationship. Go ahead and show up in my inbox. Okay.
I think those are the first three steps of a four-step process.
Okay.
and the fourth step is that you then need to engage. You need to take that content that you shared and turn it into a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you laid it out that way, because we're doing our content calendar for 2018 here, and we decided every quarter we're going to focus on one of those steps. First step, branding. Second step, creating content. Third step, sharing over social. And fourth step, engaging. And that's exactly the framework that we are going to be covering all year in the content we produce.
Outstanding. Okay. So
yeah.
I'm gonna ask you one last question. I think I got two pages of notes myself, and I think everybody who's listening got some insight from this. if you wanted to deliver a message to an industry that feels like it's being progressively commoditized, and you want to slap it on a billboard, what would you say?
I would say that in the past, people just took for granted that their job could not be done by a website or a computer or a robot. In the future, I don't think there's any job that is going to be completely safe from automation and being taken over by something that just automatically does it. So when you look at your job and when you look at what you provide, what is the unique human aspect of your expertise that you provide? What is the thing that only you can do that no other, especially no website or Gecko or anything like that can do, but that you uniquely provide, and that people will want to go to you because that's where your real value lies. That's where people are going to flock to you. In the new era where a lot of stuff does become automated, that's going to be a premium offering.
Got it. Very good. And I think I'll just throw on top of that icing on the cake, don't sell commodities. Don't do it. Sell.
I have one more recommendation, one more book recommendation.
Okay.
It's maybe the best book that I've come to on figuring out your unique value proposition. It's called Value Proposition Design: How to Create Products and Services Customers Want. And it's a part of the Strategizer series. And I'll tell you, if you go through and do the exercises in this book, I don't have any connection to the book. It's just one that I use. It's a mind blower.
Okay.
It'll really help you out.
Outstanding. And I don't know that one. So that's Value Proposition Design. I assume if I look that up on Amazon, that'll be enough to get us there. Yes?
Yep.
All right.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Kirk. I don't want to flood you with a bunch of inbound phone calls, but if people want to reach out to you or have a question or find out more about what it is that you do, how can they do that?
You can reach me on, if anybody wants to talk to me, you can email me. I'll put that out there. It's my name, KirkFaulkner@gmail.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Okay, so that's Kirk Ferguson at Gmail. Kirk Faulkner at Gmail.
Yeah,
okay, and Kirk is K-I-R-K, yeah?
Yeah, and Faulkner's F-A-U-L-K-N-E-R. Kirk like the captain, Faulkner like the writer.
Okay, got it, very good, and a dramatic writer, indeed. So without further ado, perhaps Kirk will have a follow-up. And we can talk about sort of the nitty-gritty of Facebook advertising and the 2 years you spent in Siberia and your 8 years as a stand-up comic in New York. So we'll save those for our episode number two, okay? Thanks.
I'd love to. Yeah, sounds great.
Thanks so much for joining us. It was fun, and I think we got tremendous value.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.